I thought I was sure that it was 1/4, but they got 3/4. I want to hear what they did.
I've been teaching since you were 3.
Oh my gosh, wait a second.
Once they've got that algorithm, it's done. It's game over. There's no more play time. It's math.
It's about engagement. It's about learning. It's about math. We got Matt and John coming up in just a few seconds.
And now, it's time for another edulicious episode of the Bentley Brothers Podcast, bringing you what's current and what works in education. Here are your hosts, Scott and Tim Bentley.
Bentley Brothers, Bentley, Bentley Brothers, bringing education information like...
That is so right, Scott. It's about math. And we have John Stevens and Matt Vaudry in the house with us today. So glad that you guys can join us. Let me tell you a little bit about these gentlemen. Matt Vaudry is an EdTech coach in San Dimas. And then John Stevens is an instructional tech, leader of instructional technology, I believe, in the Chaffee Joint Union High School District in Riverside County. Is that right?
Sure. That makes my position sound more exciting than it is. But yeah.
Say that 3 times fast, too, Tim. I want you to say that. Absolutely.
And most importantly, these two gentlemen have recently published a book with...
The author of Teach Like a Pirate now has his own publishing for educational books.
And you guys are the latest in the line called The Classroom Chef, and it's about math instruction. Hot topic these days with Common Core. So tell us a little bit about, let's start with John here. What do you see as a shift that we need to make in math instruction these days?
I would say that if we can make one shift, it would be to get rid of the exclusivity of right answers and start to build a little bit more curiosity, getting students to open up and take a risk and allowing them to kind of explore different options and just have some fun. But fun's a hard word because fun's different for every kid. What I'm really interested in with Common Core is building the curiosity in students and allowing them to explore different options, different opportunities to explain their reasoning and justify it.
Hey, John, let me ask you a question because I know people will think this is really, how do you create that atmosphere of fun and learning within math?
Yeah, sometimes that can be tough to do. I think the first one is creating a culture in your class where it's safe to take risks, and a class where it's a culture where it's, you know, it's acceptable to be wrong. It's acceptable to struggle, and, you know, also knowing your students, knowing, you know, who each kid is who walks through the door, and maybe you don't know their entire story, but you know a part of their story, and you can play to their strengths. You can assist their weaknesses. You can support them in their path to mastery of whatever it is that that you're working towards.
Now, when you say one right answer, you know, there's not one right answer. You know what people are thinking.
I think there's been enough videos on the Common Core on YouTube, Tim, to know what I'm thinking.
Yeah, John, Common Core. Oh, what, 2 + 2 = 5 now? So, like,
here's a design for a car in the Common Core, and it, like, drives, like, sideways or something like that.
Yeah, so Matt, why don't you talk about that? More than one right answer, how could that be?
There's 2 different ways to look at it. Some would say there's more than one right answer. Some would say that every wrong answer is valuable and a part of the process. Both of those are valid viewpoints. Let's go with the second one. So if a student says 2 + 2 = 5, I say, okay, explain to me how you got that. And they draw me a diagram. I can know from their diagram what their understanding is, where they got lost. Hmm. If we search for and thirst for the right answer, all we care about is, oh, 2 + 2 = 4, check, we got it, moving on. And you get plenty of false positives, kids that had a guess and they got it right, but you don't know, they don't actually know it yet. You didn't take time to unpack it. So it's less of a several right answers and more of a, the right answer doesn't mean that we're done, and a wrong answer doesn't mean that we're done either. The same amount of unpacking happens in either case.
I like that concept of unpacking math, and Matt, go on and tell us, okay, so a kid unpacks math, where do you take them from there?
Obviously, it depends on the kid. In any classroom, it's going to look different based on what the kid said, what the topic is that day. even the age of the students in your class is going to make a big difference. The videos I've seen on Common Core on Facebook, because there's hundreds, I'm sure, I look at it and I see what the teacher is trying to do. I see what the textbook is trying to do, but our friend Carl Lincoln-Stryker told us, and it sticks with me, anything can be done well and anything can be done poorly. And a lot of those Facebook videos are an example of a fairly good idea, which is having students unpack their answer, and it's done really poorly. So it ends up with them like, I'm not really sure why 2 + 2 = 5 in this case, or should it equal 5? They don't actually get there. And that's where John and I step in for our full day workshops and for the book, is we're hoping to help coach teachers on how to get students unpacking math in a more meaningful way.
So talk to us about, give us one thing that each one of you that I would see in a good math classroom. What would the teacher be doing with their students? Even, you know, even a lesson on something like on, say, if they're learning how to add fractions with uncommon denominators or something like that. Like, what types of activities would be going on? What types of teacher-student interactions would be taking place?
Well, I'll take one and then John could take one. My favorite that I've seen is teachers taking several answers but giving a total blank expression about which one they like the best. So, okay, I got 8 groups of 4 in my classroom. Say, okay, guys, I've got 1/2 minus 1/4. I want to hear one person from each group tell me what they think it is. And they go around. This kid says 1/4, 1/4, 3/4, 1/4, 1/4, 1/4, 1/4, all the way around. Teacher accepts all of those answers and says, okay, who heard something they liked? Who wants to make a comment about something? Says, oh, well, he said 3/4. I want to hear how they got that. Eventually, what John said of the classroom culture begins to get students drawing out answers from each other, saying, I thought I was sure that it was 1/4, but they got 3/4. I want to hear what they did. Understanding someone else's wrong answer is going to be another brick in the path for that student's understanding. So K-12, any class at all, the teacher can take a variety of answers before they decide, okay, that's the right answer, and then move on. John?
Well, and Tim, you're talking about, and both Tim and Scott, you're talking about the right answer, the one right answer. One of my favorites is a site that I've been able to curate and, you know, build in more resources for, and it's wouldyourathermath.com. And one of the favorites that we talk about during the workshops and we talk about in the book is, I believe we talk about in the book, I'm not sure. Would you rather have 7/8 of your favorite pie or 11/14 of your favorite pie? And so it's not so much like what's the right answer of which one's greater. It's let's figure out the answer to this problem and then make a decision on which one we'd rather have, using the math as part of our justification. So as far as, you know, building in that opportunity for kids to wrestle with fractions, it's not the answer is 7/8. It's I'd much rather have 7/8 because that means that I'm eating more pie. Well, what does that mean? And getting kids to really, as Matt's called it, unpack what's going on there.
Is it gluten-free?
It can be. If that's what your favorite pie is, Scott, it can be whatever you want it to be.
I like extra
Southern California hippie.
I like extra gluten, honestly.
We can add gluten. We'll sprinkle gluten on.
Just awesome. Perfect. No, I love this concept, and I love what you guys are doing. What is probably a thing that's difficult for teachers out there is how do you communicate what you're talking about to parents? So how do you do that?
Well, one of the big challenges is yeah, that disconnect from, well, we didn't do this when we were in school. And you're right, you didn't. A lot of really cool things that are happening right now because of a community online called the MTBOS, the Math Twitter Blogosphere. People are creating a lot of really amazing resources and sites and ways for getting kids to wrestle with concepts. And we have all of them on our website, classroomchef.com/links, and they're all free. You can go in there and explore. Really, it comes down to communicating with the parents. And just like you have a culture with your students, there needs to be an open line of communication with the parents. Like, look, we're going to try some things in this class this year. We're going to take some risks. Things are going to go well. Things aren't going to go well. You know, please feel free to interact with me and keep me informed of what's working, what you have questions about. And that way, there's less chance of a disconnect between home and school.
Absolutely. And what John and I have found by talking to teachers across the state and across the country is that they start to pull the tasks from their math class in during back to school night and open house. and they asked the parents, which pie would you rather have, this pie or that pie? How many cheese balls do you think are in this big container? How long is that roll of toilet paper? They start getting parents involved in the actual math itself and shows parents, listen, you can do this stuff at home. You can go online. These sites are all free. Pull one up and say to your kid, hey, how many cars do you think are in this parking lot when you're out going shopping? Math is not this isolated incident divorced from the real world. It's in everyday life. And students in the class start to see that. And the students be the ones to bring the parents on board.
So give us some, you know, you started mentioning some resources on Twitter. You have the hashtag MTBOS. That's awesome. Give us some other resources that you found for the teachers out there that are like, I love this idea. I want to do some more investigation. You know, with the internet, with your book, we can teach ourselves, right? I mean, we don't have to always go to, well, I guess it is going to someone else because you're going to somebody else on the internet. But what sources could they go to be learning more of these concepts?
I echo what John said. A lot of our favorites we've been curating here at classroomchef.com/links. It's not by any means all of the math resources that are helpful for creating this kind of culture online, but it's some of our favorites that we've used in our own classrooms and with adults. And as John mentioned, they're all free, which is my favorite teacher price. It's a real bummer to find this really cool thing. Like, oh yeah, it's $6 for the handout, or it's a subscription fee. And there are some that we like enough to pay for. Most of the stuff we use is free, and it's popping up all the time. This is stuff that math teachers are making for other math teachers to use. The sharing in this community is overwhelmingly cool. It makes us get so stoked. Like, it's a great time to be a teacher.
The bigger one, really, than all of these sites is Twitter. And you two gentlemen know it from the interactions that you've had. I mean, that's how we met. But it's huge. It's this collaborative group of people who are there to be the best possible staff lounge they can be. And, you know, it's something that we talk about in the book. It's something that we talk about in our everyday professions of being able to collaborate with others and just sharing with everybody. Like, look, this group of people online is amazing. It's the MTBOS. You really need to go on and check them out. A highly motivated group of people to just do what's best for kids.
Yeah, you know, I am so grateful for you two. I know you've been at this. I know you've been in the classroom. I know you've been doing the work that makes this like really productive. And you've been out there sharing that too for teachers to use. Tell us more a little bit about the book.
I'll give you a quick backstory on it. You know, Matt and I had a chance to sit down with Dave Burgess, as he said, you know, the author of Teach Like a Pirate and now leading the Burgess Consulting Company and, you know, publishing. And he sat down with us, and I think you were in that same room with us there, Scott. It was like, you guys need to write a book. And basically, he just told us to write our manifesto and write what it is that we think people would read. And we poured our heart into it. You know, we've got stories about kicking a cabinet and burying our head in our hands and crying, and, you know, the struggles of teaching, the hardships of teaching. Like, look, it's not always going to be good. And we try to offer up some anecdotes as to how to make those improvements and how we slowly made our way towards being a better and being a more inclusive teacher.
Yeah, and I know you guys' hearts are in it, and your hearts are there for teachers, and you want to have something there for them. As far as, yeah, it's hard. I'm going to be totally transparent. It is really hard to teach math right now. It's really difficult to figure out the way to impact your kids the most. And I know there's a ton of teachers out there that are really trying to find ways to impact there are kids in this area of math that's so difficult. And I'm really thankful that you guys stepped up and wrote this book. And I appreciate that you're on to share about it.
Well, we're hoping that people that read the book and follow us on Twitter will notice that we don't have our act together. We don't have it all figured out. We've had some success in some areas, but we share warts and all the miserable state of our early classrooms, how awful it was if you're a student in our class. And by trying to get better, by plugging into communities, by getting empowered, those helped us become incrementally better teachers. But we're hoping to empower incrementally those teachers that are in the trenches right now, that are those first and second year early teachers that are, they don't see any light at the end of the tunnel, or those that are deeper in their career and struggling with new content and new standards.
And let me just make you feel better, Matt. I've been teaching since you were three.
Oh my gosh, wait a second.
And, confidence.
I've been teaching since you were three. Do the math.
That's freaking fantastic. Sorry.
And I can tell you that every week I feel like I'm learning something new about teaching math. Uh-huh. And I feel like everything I learn, I have 10 new things that I don't know about how to teach math. So it's not like you ever arrive, unless it's going to come in my 29th year, maybe. I don't know.
I think it comes in your 32nd year, Tim Bedley.
Oh, is that when you hit it? You hit that stride. Hey, let's get back to, I want to talk a little bit more math itself with you guys. Because that's where my passion is really just, I love talking about math. How we're going to get kids to learn math. Let's talk about that dirty word right now, algorithms. That's been a hot topic, I know. Do we teach kids algorithms? When do we teach it to them? What's the purpose of algorithms? Manipulatives, how do those come into play when it comes to algorithms? You guys use manipulatives in middle school and high school? Or,
yes.
Are you just kind of saying, here's how to, you know, I mean, there's just so many things I would love to talk to you guys about. We don't have time for it. But what about the I do? We do, you do, you know, it's like, shouldn't we be flipping that thing on its head? And that kind of, I think, goes into the whole idea of algorithms as well, because algorithms are what you show to the kids on the board, and then they try it, and then they go off on their own and do those 50 problems and get bored out of their minds trying to solve 50 of the same problems.
Yes. And funny.
Yes.
Matt Vaudry, I love you, dude.
There's a lot in there. I can tell that there's a lot, like, people want to know these things. You're not alone in asking these questions. Actually, Jamie Duncan, who wrote most of chapter 11 for our book, talks about that exact same thing, taking the I do, we do, you do model and turning it on its head.
Wait a minute. Jamie Duncan wrote in your book?
This is an interview. We took stuff from her blog. We talked to her on Hangouts, and she wrote a good chunk of chapter 11.
Yeah, she's a good friend of mine. I teach with her.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
Yeah, she's really awesome.
I do, we do, you do, and turning it on its head, letting students play with it first, letting them struggle with the concept, letting them get there and put their own framework around the learning first. I know Jonathan.
Matt, how long do you let them struggle with it? Because that's a difficulty for a lot of teachers. You have content that you have to get through, right? How long do you let them struggle with this? Sorry to interrupt you. It's just like, that's like the thing I know I'm asking and I know teachers are asking.
It's a slippery slope for sure. That's why it's a Bachelor of Arts degree and not a Bachelor of Science degree. At some point, the teacher's got to know their own class. You know the sweet spot. If you come in too soon, you can't go back. Right. You've already told them, this is the algorithm we're going on from here. But if you wait too long, they get frustrated and go, I'm done, and they toss their pencil in the air and it's okay, whatever. That sweet spot in the middle is different for every classroom. Dan Meyer says, you can always add, you can't subtract. Once they see the algorithm, they know, oh, that's where we're going right now. You can give them little pieces here and there, you can give them breadcrumbs along the lesson, but once you drop in, here's the algorithm, okay, now I memorize that, I put it on paper, I do it at 10 problems for homework. It's the old way that we all did when we were in school.
Well, and just to go back to what Tim said about the manipulatives, like Matt's talking about the breadcrumbs. First of all, start off with a question. What do you notice? What do you wonder? And then let kids get a little bit frustrated. And once again, like Matt said, you know your kids. Let them get a little bit frustrated. And then here, slide in this manipulative. Okay, now let's play with this. See what this does. How does this help us? Does it help us? What do you notice? What do you wonder now? And then slowly start to build that in, because as Matt has said, once they've got that algorithm, it's done. It's game over. There's no more play time. It's now it's math and not exploration.
And if you do it right, if you nail this, and I've seen it done really well, the students ask you, isn't there an easier way? This sounds like a lot of work. Is there like a formula or something? Like, funny you should ask, dear student. Let me get I'll drop this in your lap for you.
Hey, you know what I really love is I love, Matt, when you say, like when we were young, we learned this way.
I know, I love
back that. In the 70s, you mean?
Hey, listen, we may have gone to school 20 years apart. I'll bet our schools looked nearly identical.
Yeah, sadly, you're right.
Yeah. All right. Well, what else? We got like one more minute here to ask you some questions about math and about your book. John, what else is just burning at you right now that you want to tell us, that you want to get out to teachers out there that you just wish would change in our education system with math instruction?
I think I've already said it, but take a risk. Why not? What's the worst that can happen? I did a lot of things out of pure naivety in my first few years that I think paved the way for me having some success, just being naive and saying, hey, you know what, I'm going to go up and ask Lowe's if they're willing to donate materials to build scale models of the Twin Towers. Hey, I'm going to ask this billboard guy if he'd be willing to come in and talk to my students and put their drawing up on a billboard. You know, like, bring the community in and bring parents in, bring people in and go out and ask questions and take risks, knowing that the worst that somebody's going to say ever is no.
And I love that, John. I would tell my students that almost every day of the year, is the worst you get is no, and you already have a no if you don't ask.
Yep.
You already have a no if you don't ask, so just ask.
That all sounds good.
I believe it's the time of the show now where we are going to play a little game with you. So you wrote this awesome book about teaching math, so it's time for you to play Math Wars. The two of you will compete to answer some math problems and try to win a free copy of your book for one lucky listener. Scott, tell our audience about who Matt and John will be playing for today.
John Stevens. Love you, buddy. You will be competing for Maddie Bettis. And Matt Vaudry, you will be competing for Ronnelly Feith. Did I say that right? Did I get her name right?
Free.
Freeth with an R.
Freeth. Sorry, Ronnelly. If one of you, whoever is able to answer three questions first, you will get a copy of The Classroom Chef, the newest, hottest math book out there for teachers. And we're excited to see who's going to win this prize. Tim, back to you.
Here we go. So do each one of you have a ring-in sound that you're going to be using so that we know who buzzed in first? John, what's yours? That's John's drum roll, okay? And Matt, what sound are you going to be using?
Does that come through?
Okay.
It does.
That's it. That's the cash register. All right. So we're going to get started, and remember, whoever gets three questions first correctly is the winner. If neither one of you get three questions correct, or if we have a tie when we get to, say, the seventh question, then we have a tiebreaker for you. So, Scott, why don't you give the first question, number one there.
Number one, what is 17 squared?
Yes, John.
17 squared is?
Nope.
Oh, he's
Matt, what's the answer?
249.
Nope, that's incorrect.
Very close. Very close.
289.
Math is hard, guys.
That is hard. Okay, well, we'll give you a little easier one, okay?
Both John and I separately have written about how timed math tests just increase stress and anxiety for our students. I'm feeling it right now.
That's what we're here for. Stress and anxiety.
Okay, here we go. Now, don't ring it too soon if you don't.
I knew it. I froze.
Yeah, and you can use paper. I forgot to tell you, you can use paper on this, but don't. No devices. Oh, there they are. Okay, you guys have paper.
Can they use Google Drawings?
No devices. Okay.
Matt's computer will crash.
Ready? Here we go. Which solid figure has four more edges than vertices? Which solid figure? The cash register, Matt.
The cube.
That's correct. Cube is correct. One right for Matt.
We would have also accepted rectangular prism.
Okay, Scott.
What do you call this sequence found most often in nature? 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, 21.
Fibonacci! Man!
By the way, those of you out there looking for a great way to start the year, U-Cubed by Joe Bowler. Fantastic stuff.
Oh, yeah. And estimation 180. Okay, next next question, number four. It's tied at 1-1. John's getting into it here. The word hundred is derived from the word hundrat, that's Old Norse, which actually does not mean 100. What number does hundrat mean? Cash register, Matt.
10.
That is incorrect.
John, but we appreciate the effort.
Yes, John.
120.
He got it right. 120. How'd you know
you
that?
You Googled that. He turned.
I wrote it down on my paper.
Oh.
There's no way he could have Googled it then if it's on his paper.
I think he binged it.
I don't know.
Okay.
I call foul right. play.
Get your calculators ready because I'm about to ask you
root,
which may be triangular but probably square. What is the square root of 2,401?
49. Oh, he's looking. Oh, man. John got it. 49.
Oh, yep. I see it now. Nicely done.
And does that mean we have a winner, Scott?
Does that mean we have a winner, too?
John, did you get 3 points, John? Let's see. You got...
That's three.
Fibonacci, he did have three.
And 120 and the 49. Hey. You got three.
Algorithms for the win, by the way.
Congratulations, John. You were the first to get three correct answers, and that's good enough to be a winner.
Crickets.
Congratulations, John. You've won absolutely nothing. But Maddie Bettis just won a free copy of the hottest new math book out there, The Classroom Chef, written by Matt Vaudry and the John Stevens.
Good job, gentlemen. Now, you know what? We got to ask you these last questions, especially the last one. These others, we don't need to ask you. But let's see. I bet you guys know about this. Have you heard of the birthday problem?
Yes.
No.
John? No? Uh-huh. Okay. Well, you can both. Matt, how well do you know it? I mean, you don't have it memorized or anything, do you?
No,
Google it. He's Googling it right now.
It's a party trick. I'm making sure I got the facts straight.
No. Right. Don't Google it. Okay. I'm going to try this with you.
Okay.
So, okay. The birthday problem says this. Well, I'm going to ask you a question about it. If you put 57 people in a room, the odds in a percent that two of those people will have the same birthday is about 99%. 57 people, the odds of two of them having the same birthday is about 99%. So my question for you guys is, how many people do you have to have in the room to have the odds be 50%? Yes, Matt.
It's 28.
You're close.
How many people for 50%?
Yes, how many people would you have in the room for 50% chance of the odds of being 50% that two of those people are going to have the same birthday?
I don't know.
I'm going to go with Fibonacci.
Okay. We'll do it this way. John, higher or lower?
I'm going to say higher.
Higher than 28, and the answer is lower. It's
wow.
23 people in the room.
If you'll turn your eyes to my screen, I can show you here where the probability breaks even. And in my defense, 28 was correct. 28 is right up here where it's greater than half. You didn't say what's the lowest number that's greater than half.
No, 23 is 50%.
Right, you didn't say greater than 50%. And really, in reality, any one of these numbers past 23 is a correct answer.
That's true. They would all be 50%. But not exactly. Well, of course, it's not exactly. It's 49.95% anyways.
So what we're doing right now, this back and forth, this is one of the California standards for mathematical practice, attending to precision.
Yes. And it's also the other CMP that's just talking about justifying your answers, right?
Yep.
Bingo.
Critiquing the reasoning of others. Okay. So can you let our listeners know how they can get a hold of you now that you have thousands of new fans out there?
I can get a hold of both of us via classroomchef.com and following us on Twitter at classroomchef. They can get in touch with me by following me on Twitter, jstevens009, or going to my blog, fishing4tech.com.
And I'm also on Twitter at Mr. Vaudrey, V as in Virgin, A-U, D as in Delta, R-E-Y, or at MrVaudrey.com. And we're both on Classroom Chef.
Very cool.
Hey, everybody, listeners out there, if you'll check out Global School Play Day, if you haven't signed up yet, it's February 1st, 2017. Get your class signed up. If you're listening past that date, it's coming again the next February, so sign up for that. Like us on Facebook. I don't even know if we have a Facebook, Tim. Love us on Twitter. Subscribe on whatever you want. We hope you enjoy the Bedley Brothers, and we hope you love it because not because of the Bedley Brothers, but because we bring on amazing people like John and Matt who are sharing things out there to impact the lives of the students that you actually get a chance to impact in your practice. Big Ron here.
Right on. And thanks so much for watching us. GlobalSchoolPlayDay.com. Check it out. Sign up. And thanks for watching.
Mom and Dad.
Mom and Dad.
Yeah. Bedley Brothers, Bedley, Bedley Brothers, bringing education information like no other. Bedley Brothers, Bedley, Bedley Brothers, bringing